For the Medical Journal of Australia, I'm Kate Swanell. Welcome to the first MJA podcast of 2022.
Dowry abuse doesn't happen in isolation. It is part of the general scenario of gender inequality, patriarchal dominance, coercive control, abuse of power, and abuse of power from maybe husband to wife, and from even woman-to-woman abuse of power, from mother-in-law to daughter-in-law, from sister-in-law to daughter-in-law.
That was the voice of Dr. Manjula O'Connor, a consultant psychiatrist from the University of Melbourne. Dr. O'Connor is an expert in dowry abuse and is executive and founding director of the Australasian Centre for Human Rights and Health. In 2019, Dr. O'Connor and her colleagues were part of a successful campaign in Victoria to have dowry abuse included in the state's Family Violence Protection Act. Now she is fighting for consistent legal protections across the country for victims of dowry abuse. Dr. O'Connor has co-authored a perspective on this topic for the MJA, and she is my special guest today. So you've written a perspective on dowry abuse. Let's start with the basics. What is dowry abuse?
So the custom of dowry is where, in the context of a marriage, there is a substantial transfer of wealth and goods from one party to the other. So it can be from the bride to the groom's family, or it can be from the groom to the bride's family. So in some parts of the world, as in South Asia, it's the bride's family that transfers this wealth, whereas in parts of Middle East and Africa, it's the other way around, where the groom gives gifts to the bride's family, whereas in the South Asian context, it can be not just the gifts that are given, but the cost also includes the cost of the wedding. Like, you might have heard about the big fat Indian wedding. It goes on for 4 or 5 days and often can take place in 5-6-star hotels or in old palaces that get taken over and cost $100,000, usually borne by the bride's family, and they often pay for the cost of the groom's family coming and even staying in a hotel. That can really mount up to huge numbers. So that's dowry, right?
Yeah.
So that's substantial transfer of wealth and material from one party to the other. So the dowry abuse on the other side is an extension of that idea, in that if you are grown up in a culture and you are a male person and your mother who's given birth to you, there is the sense that when this boy grows up, he's going to bring a bride and he's going to bring dowry with her. And if you're born as a girl in that culture, you grow up and your parents grow up with the idea that you're going to have to save huge amounts of money for this girl to be, you know, married off, because marriage is absolutely a seminal moment in a South Asian woman's life, or in fact, most women's life. And so they grow up with the idea they have to save lots of money to get their daughter married off, and they sometimes start saving from the time the girl is born.
I can imagine that would make female babies not particularly welcome.
That's exactly what's happening. And
yeah.
So the female babies do cost a lot. You first have to educate them, and then you have to put away this amount of money. But this amount of money is also seen as antemortem inheritance, because the South Asian cultures are generally patrilocal. So basically means that patrilinear, which means that the bride goes to live with her husband, that's patrilocal, but that the wealth of the family will be patrilinear. So
yeah,
it'll go from the father to the son to the grandson. And in that case, the girls are compensated for by having dowry. That's the antemortem inheritance. So
right.
That's the idea behind it, And in a way, it is protecting the daughter's interests. In that system, it makes sense. But there is inherent gender inequality in that as well, because inheritance of a family property could be far more than the dowry she'll ever get. The system itself creates those kind of issues. It needs to be brought under a magnifying lens and to look at where the abuses are occurring in the Australian context, because in the Indian context, they have had laws and activists working against it from the colonial times.
So when does it slip into dowry abuse? When does it become more than it should?
When the groom has that sense of entitlement, and his parents and his family have that sense of entitlement over what gifts they should receive at the wedding, mm-hmm. right? So the gifts we are talking about is gold gifts. So people expecting to receive a diamond set for a mother-in-law or a gold earrings and chain for a brother's wife, and the brother gets the cash. Yeah. And how much cash should he get? And a list being given. We want this gifts. We want a washing machine. We want an air conditioner. We want a bed. We want a microwave. I heard a story from a young woman whose mother-in-law gave a list of, huge list of gifts that they had to provide. And in that was a washing machine and a microwave and a car, various other things. She said to me that she went, when she got married and she went to the mother-in-law's house, she saw that she already had a microwave. She already had a fridge. She already had a washing machine. And the new things were just lying there in the corner. That is greed, and that is entitlement to the nth degree.
Does the abuse go on for years, or does it only happen around the time of the wedding?
Both. So the gifts can be expected at the time of the wedding, before the wedding, at the engagement, mm-hmm. during the wedding, after the wedding. And after the wedding, at birthdays, at festivals, new births, any kind of an event where the bride's family are expected to take the gifts to the groom's family. One of the stories that I wrote in that paper that was published was of a young woman called Deepshikha Godara, who was murdered in Melbourne. After suffering years of dowry abuse, demands for more money and more cash. And her father, he lives in Delhi, but he worked with us intensively in Melbourne to help us understand what had gone wrong and why he thought we should get laws in Victoria and in Australia. He told me how at every single festival, they were asked to go and deliver those gifts. And this happened many times in a year. Yeah. And it had already gone on for 4, 5, 6 years. Yeah. By the time she was murdered by her husband, they already had a child. So it was about 6 years or 7 years into the marriage.
Is dowry abuse a red flag for other forms of abuse or coercive control?
Absolutely correct. Yeah. Dowry abuse doesn't happen in isolation. It is part of the general scenario of gender inequality, patriarchal dominance, coercive control, mm-hmm. abuse of power, and abuse of power from maybe husband to wife, and from even woman to woman abuse of power, from mother-in-law to daughter-in-law,
wow.
from sister-in-law to daughter-in-law. So even the groom's sisters can get into it, become quite pernicious.
And presumably can lead to physical abuse, verbal abuse, etc.
Yes. And so the extreme, of course, is murder.
Yeah, of course.
This woman was actually blocked out of her house because she refused to give further gifts as demanded.
Do we know how prevalent dowry abuse is in Australia?
And so the survey that we reported in that article, we sent that across Australia through an Indian newspaper and also through our website, our NGO website. And what we found was that 32% of people knew someone who had suffered dowry abuse or they had suffered dowry abuse themselves. So yeah. 32% of people. Wow. So that means there is a lot of people within the South Asian community who are aware of this going on or have experienced it.
What should GPs be looking out for?
The most important thing for a GP to look out for is when they see a young woman of a South Asian origin coming in with unexplained injuries and unexplained symptoms. So I'll give you an example. A young woman told me just the other day that they got married in Australia, so no dowry was given. And they both were here alone. Their families are back in India. She was not employed at the time of the marriage. Mm-hmm. When she's got a job, he demanded that from her income of $3,000 per month of salary, she pay the mortgage, she pay all the bills, she pay for the groceries, because she was living off him. They've been married 2 years. She was living off him. Well, when he married her, she knew she was unemployed. And in the meantime, she was doing all the housework and she looked after him and he had sex and, free sex. Otherwise, he'd be going to brothels. But in his mind, at the back of his mind, is that sense of entitlement over her wealth. And when she said no, there was a lot of arguments and she stood her ground and he pushed her hard. She fell down and she had a huge big bruise on the left side of her leg. Mm-hmm. So she went to the GP and she told him, she said, I've got a bruise. And he looked at it and she said, how did you get it? She said, oh, I just fell down. Yeah. She did not tell him that this was a domestic violence episode. And the GP did not inquire any further.
I'm chatting today with Dr. Manjula O'Connor from the University of Melbourne and the Australasian Centre for Human Rights and Health. Her co-authored perspective is free to access on mja.com.au. The web address to the article is in the show notes of this podcast, as well as links to the Centre's anti-dowry abuse campaigns. If you're enjoying this podcast, you can find all our other episodes at mja.com/podcasts, where they are free to access. You can also subscribe via Spotify, Apple Music, Audible, and Amazon Music, so you never have to miss an upcoming show. Back to our chat. When a GP sees these signs and has a successful conversation in the sense that the woman tells the GP what's happened, what is the next step? Who should that patient be referred to?
So the important point for the GPs to understand is to, in their mind, to actually be clear about there is physical violence, but there may not be physical violence. Mm-hmm. There might just be an emotional abuse and what we call coercive control. So basically, this woman went through coercive behaviors on the part of the husband about demanding that money. So yeah. Financial coercion. It was when she continually stood her ground, he found out he was out of control. And he tried to control her by subjecting her to physical violence. And this is what GPs need to make an assessment of how serious the threat to that woman's life is. If it looks like it is happening repeatedly and that he has threatened violence repeatedly, then it's important that that young woman is connected to 1800 Respect. So the 1800 Respect number, she can get counseling if she's not willing to leave the husband. And they will often continue to give that counseling for a long time. But if there is violence and that woman is afraid for her life, she can and she should be made aware that there is intervention order that she can obtain, which is a safety family violence order, that they can stay home together, but he is warned not to subjected to any physical violence and or yes. emotional abuse, because then that will be considered a breach of intervention order, and then mm-hmm. he could go to jail. Yeah. And sometimes some men do respond to that. On the other side, there are men who become very angry about it, and because they feel ashamed and embarrassed, and yeah. their power balance has been reversed. As a result of that, there can be more threats and more violence to her life. Often that leads to breakup of a marriage because the man is so incensed that he can't cope with living with her anymore. So I think that the GPs have to gauge as to the seriousness of that. But as a first step, 1800 respect is a very good number. And if they feel that her life is at risk, they will advise the woman to ring the police.
What other legal protections do victims specifically of dowry abuse have in Australia?
Only very recently have we received a law in Victoria, which is a result of a campaign initiated by our NGO, the Australasian Centre for Human Rights and Health, that we kickstarted in 2012-13. And it was for 6 years before we got the law. So wow. we got the law in 2019. And I have to say that there was a lot of backlash from the community leaders. The patriarchal structures, they did not want that law because they thought there was no such problem in Australia, and that it's an Indian problem and it should not be brought to Australia. Well, I think that I have seen enough patients in my practice, in my own practice, at least half the women are suffering some kind of financial coercion and dowry, which is essentially dowry abuse, because it is coming from a sense of entitlement over yes. her, and that whatever she has, whatever she earns, or whatever her parents have, the groom feels they're entitled to it. That has been the product of the culture of dowry.
So how do we stop it at the source? Is there a way of re-educating South Asian communities in Australia about this?
Yes. So we received a grant from the federal government in partnership with an organization, Harmony Alliance, in prevention of dowry abuse within Australia. So mm-hmm. because it is very much an expression of gender inequality and patriarchal abuse, and it does not occur in isolation away from domestic violence, we've been able to create a workshop based on our survey as to how to educate communities. So we educated trainers sourced from within the communities who have gone on to run their workshops based on that workshop material, about sensitizing to how dowry abuse comes about and what can be done about it. So it's an Australia-wide program. And what we are, so far we have run about 15 workshops, and we are hoping to continue it into the new year. And so that will mean that we will have reached maybe 500 members of South Asian community, maybe more than that. And that means that if you imagine that person talks to at least one or two more people, mm-hmm. you know, the word spreads around. So we have started to run those workshops. But what we really want is a uniformity in the laws against dowry abuse in Australia. Yes. We want laws, a Federal Family Law Act, to include dowry demands and that as a cultural expression of financial extortion, that word dowry abuse in that act, so that people become sensitized that the government and the laws are watching, and that it is not going unrecognized.
And have you had much interest at the federal level in getting that done?
So we've been having regular meetings with the Federal Attorney General's policy team. So and we are due to meet with them again this year. And we are hoping that they have received enough message from our conversations and the research that we provided them, that it is a coercive control and that it will neatly fit into the category of domestic violence. I mean, it's not a hard thing to imagine, really.
Yeah.
And because the custom of dowry is so ubiquitous within the South Asian weddings, that the dowry abuse is often a blind spot, even with the victims themselves. And that's why the law is necessary.
So what impact does dowry abuse have on the families of the victim?
So if you can imagine a family, parents who have given out a dowry that is almost as much as their annual income in a wedding, and then there is this more demands happening, and the young woman is in Australia, and they're quite isolated, they are new to the country, and suddenly one day, she suffers domestic violence because she doesn't give in to his demands. There was one woman whose husband demanded that she give her mobile phone across to his sister. And she said, no, it's got information in it, and I don't want to hand it over. And then he wanted the password to her bank account. And she said to him, okay, I'll give you the password to my bank account, but if you give me the password to your bank account. He was so incensed. How dare she talk back to him? He locked her out of the house in winter. She rang her parents, and they came running, and they were suffering from the most severe anxiety, depression, panic attacks, because their daughter is here, isolated, alone. They thought they were marrying their daughter to this Australian, Indian, sophisticated man.
Yes.
And what they got was a violent criminal, effectively. And it's not just the loss of the daughter's wedding, daughter's health. It's the shame, the embarrassment, the loss of dowry. And I've treated so many of the parents who come from India in absolute desperation, treated them alongside their daughter, and done family sessions just to trauma therapy, help them reconcile with the trauma of what's happening to their vulnerable daughter.
And their bank account.
I have heard stories of parents in India having heart attacks, suffering strokes, dying, because for the parents, for Indian parents, this daughter's wedding is so important.
Yeah.
It's a societal display of status. The shame that goes with it, that people feel, is enough to give them a heart attack.
Do you think there's a generational thing going on here? Are you hopeful that younger South Asian men and women are not going to submit to this?
Yes, I'm sure that is correct, that they are younger, more educated young women and men who feel able to, go against the centuries-old tradition. But they have to be fairly strong-minded to withstand that current. It's uneven. There is a trend, but it is uneven. We need to keep making this awareness, spread this awareness so that it becomes even, and that mothers who are old fashioned and have brought up their sons thinking he'll bring a bride and he'll bring the dowry with it, that will serve to pay for the dowry of their daughter. And that's happened a lot. The daughter-in-law's jewelry get given to the sister-in-law when she gets married. That system of crazy thinking needs to really be made aware, and women who suffered this abuse need to talk about it, because a lot of it is completely silent.
Are women in the community talking about it more now?
I think there is more awareness, and the people have realized that it is going on, and it is underhanded as well. It's not often direct, give it to me.
Yeah.
It's underhanded, like after the wedding, or just on the day of the wedding, can you pay for the tickets? Can you pay for the visa? Or that, my son is not as educated as your daughter, so we'll get them married so your daughter can get a visa and he can come on that visa. That's in exchange for dowry. So there's a lot of conversation now happening within the community. And the Victorian government just gave us a grant to do a theater project. So we do community participatory theater, in which we will be bringing people around to bring stories that we can portray on the stage and concretize the problem, and where we can actually also highlight the law in Victoria, because a lot of people don't even know that we have a law in Victoria that says that demanding dowry is domestic violence.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.